Hey there, this is your old buddy Tom, the Toonami Operations Module. Settle in, it's about to get good. Toonami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me, I've waited long enough.
As I gaze upon the beautiful abyss of outer space, I can't help but reminisce on how we held onto our faith. Gold is how we stayed till the day that time would say that Toonami's back, bitches. Pardon my francais. Now every week the absolution blasts off while the masses watch as an old familiar mascot by the name of Tom takes a seat and kicks the broadcast off, making major moves like a triple cut backdrop. I still remember watching Nebion doing damage and thinking, damn, is Goku ever gonna reach Namek? Obviously, I got a lot of love for the classics. The speed at which I used to run home to watch was the fastest. Absolution moving, flying through the galaxy. Toonami's back, the slap in the face to those who doubted it. Remain Toonami faithful till the day that I am gray and old. And like a Super Saiyan's glow, I will always stay gold.
This is Nerdcore Absolution. Come to peace with your inner nerd, and after you can stay gold like T.O.M. Chilling out the galaxy, and we know him.
Watching closely from a perch among the stars, as viewers await the moment when the spirit bomb can charge. Hito Yui self detonates. Yu Yu Hakusho.
Hey there, my Toonami generation, and welcome to a brand new episode of Tom's Prerogative, right here on the Absolution Network. I am your prom Tom Captain, Thomas Mattis, and on this episode 136 of the Prerogative, we have some great news of a classic Toonami show coming back to Toonami. We also had recently in the past month the first shots of another classic that's soon to come back. And in the main review, we start what is to be a 3-episode Tom's Prerogative review of everybody's favorite DC teenage superhero group, the Teen Titans, as we review Teen Titans versus the Justice League. All that and more on this episode of Tom's Prerogative. And yes, it's great to be back. As you can hear, the fans here on the Absolution Network are going full blast. That you certainly can hear, though it might be a bit more quieter to you depending on how well the noise removal works. Sound engineering is fun, ladies and gentlemen. It really is. But yes, it's the midst of summer, and pretty much no matter where I go, I have to have air conditioning going on full blast, because I am a big person. I am a really big person, so I always feel hot. I do much better in the winter, where my big Jewish hairy man body keeps me warm. You know, the type of warmth where it's 32 degrees and you can go out in a t-shirt and shorts. That type of warmth. By the way, the poor unfortunate soul who decided to continue listening after hearing the words big Jewish hairy man body, thank you for staying on. But there's so much. It's been a couple of months since I last came to you with episode 135. Had to go through a few things. Like I said, one of them being the fact that I do not work well in summer. But that aside, a lot of things have happened. Particularly over this past month of July, as we are now in August. One, the Anime Expo happened at the beginning of the month, which gave us our first look at the second and third season, as it turns out, of Fooly, which will be coming back to Toonami will be debuting on Toonami at a later date. But I say coming back as, again, of course, it's the series coming back to Toonami. It makes Fooly Cooly a very interesting series, this being the second series The first one being Big O, in which the rabid fan base of the series be here in America, leading to sequels being made. And again, Fooly Cooly is one of those really rare series where it's really hard to find somebody who will say something bad about Fooly Cooly. There's so much great stuff with Fooly Cooly that is returning, by the way. One of them being The Pillows. The Pillows, which is the musical band that you heard a lot of in the original Fooly Cooly, is coming back for seasons 2 and 3. That's awesome. We love their music. You know, I still rock out to I Think I Can and you start. You name me one anime fan who hasn't rocked out to that. So you have that, just the crazy story. Fooly Cooly was just a fun series to watch. And, you know, at the end of the day, that's what a commercial product, like commercial animation, is supposed to be. It's supposed to be there to entertain us. And the thing is, you can look in Fooly Cooly and find so many different things and everything. And you know, when I reviewed Fooly Cooly, you know, I talked a lot about, you know, the sort of the deeper theme of puberty that, you know, perpetrated over the past 6 episodes. So it's going to be fun to see if they duplicate that, if they go with a different theme when seasons 2 and 3 come out. So the trailers just looked awesome. It looks like we're going to be following a female main protagonist. And so it's going to be interesting to see how that works out. And again, those themes of puberty and the changing that teenagers go through. Will that be returning? How will that work with a female lead? Because especially in this age of political consumerism and political correctness, that can be a very touchy subject for a lot of people, for better or for worse. Again, not either or, but, you know, this is a very different age than when the first Fooly Cooly came out, as far as America is concerned. Japan's pretty much the same, but it's not better, but, you know, here in America, we're very different than we were, like, 10 years ago when Fooly Cooly first came out. Actually, Fooly Cooly didn't come out until it came, like, 2003, I think, so, yeah, 15 years ago. Very different country! And I cannot put that enough, how different of a country we are. And those who know what I'm talking about know what I'm talking about. So that's very interesting. Speaking of being a very different country, in around 2001, and I believe it was 2001, there was a series that debuted on Toonami that, we all fell in love with. It was a space adventure pirates and treasure and bounty hunters. Cat girls, female samurais, and the galactic ley line. I'm, of course, talking about one of my favorite animes of all time, Outlaw Star. And it has been recently announced this past week that on August 19th, which is a couple weeks away from when this is recording, hello, future people, like 10 years in the future who might be listening to this. So August 19th, 2017, Outlaw Star will be replacing Ghost in the Shell at around, I think, 2:30 a.m. It's 2 or 2:30 a.m., I can't remember which, but we'll be replacing it, and they will be showing Outlaw Star. So Outlaw Star is coming back to Toonami. And I think that is great news. I think one thing I have wanted to see, and a lot of people have wanted to see, has been a return of older series to Toonami. Things like Outlaw Star, Ronin Warriors, certainly Gundam Wing for that matter, and G Gundam. We want to see those older series come back. It would be great if maybe they could show them at an earlier time, and or maybe move Toonami up so we don't have to stay so late on Saturday night, because I tell you something, it's hell having to sleep late on Sundays. Especially when you're trying to set a... when you're older and you're trying to set a time to get up and you can't get up, and that's a whole mess. But either way, they are bringing Outlaw Star back. And one of the interesting things that immediately everybody thought of, because now everybody, of course, has the DVD. We'll still be watching it anyways, but we have the DVD, though. And that is that we know of a particular episode that was admitted from the original broadcast run, or for that matter, all broadcast runs of Toonami. And for those who don't know, who've never seen the series or whatnot, bit of spoiler, it's not a bit of spoiler, but well, episode 23, which is generally a filler episode, because it's an episode that really goes over the main character, Gene, getting this particular bullet, or this particular series of bullets. Well, the series takes place, or essentially the episode in question, and again, like I said, spoiler for those who've never seen the series, takes place on a particular planet that is basically one giant hot springs. As such, several of the female characters appear in the DVD, or if you have, like I said, this never appeared on the original broadcast, but if you have the DVDs, or on Blu-ray, as it's recently been released on Blu-ray, and I do want to get that. but in that episode, the female characters and a lot appear naked. There are nudity, and nudity in regards of boobies. It is what it is. It's not boobies like in high school DxD. This is like the late 1990s type of nudity, and it's shown, it's not, it's hard to explain. It's not like today's ecchi show, because this is an ecchi show, though it could be said there's a lot of sexual comedy and sexual innuendo in this series. It's not an ecchi show. Of course, the point, as I've said over and over again, is that in the original broadcast, this episode was omitted. You know, which makes sense when you think about the fact that the original Toonami was shown at 5-6 o'clock in the evening. yeah, they weren't going to show that episode with kids possibly watching. It was funny to think of that, and then, of course, well, then again, that was 2000, and I'm thinking of how, like, in the early 90s, ECW used to run on local Philadelphia television at 6 o'clock at night with the things they were doing. Like crucifying a man. Because that's always fun. But yeah, so they omitted the episode. So when this news came out, and I have to laugh at this, apparently one of the most immediate questions that came out is, are you going to show episode 23? Which is the Hot Springs episode. And they don't have an update yet. They've not denied or confirmed that the episode will be shown. But there has been something said by DJ Clark Nova on Twitter about the clarifying officially as part of Toonami, saying we would like to show it hopefully with light censoring, which they have done. There is precedent for it. Code Geass, when it was originally showed on Adult Swim, there's an episode where I can't remember the character's name, but there is a one of the resistance fighters who's dark-skinned, white hair, was she saying that, or she's with the Roy, I can't remember which. Basically, there's an episode where she gets trapped in the jungle, and she's taking a bath under this jungle waterfall, and I do believe she's part of the Royal, you guys can help me with their names, I'm blanking on names, but, resistance so that she was fighting, accidentally stumbles upon her, and it's part of this whole big romance between the two, which is one of the very few good ending, or at least as far as character endings, good character endings that I like as part of the original Code Geass. And I have issues with Code Geass. Very much like I have the same issues with Gurren Lagann. Again, different story for a different time if I ever find the courage to finally review those. And challenge myself to see, am I wrong? Trust me, I have tried. But that's completely different. The point is, precedent for them doing light censoring. And I don't think anybody's complaining. I'm not really concerned with seeing the episode, especially since I have the DVD. But I think a lot of us would like to see them show it as part of the complete series. And we'd like to see the complete series be released on television. And it's a principle thing of, you know, being anti-censorship, in a way, if that makes sense. You know, we hate that, like, especially at 2 a.m. in the morning, we on a show that is most meant to be for adults to watch it, there can't be adult things. Because we, heaven forbid, there be adult things at 2:30 a.m. in the morning when kids are supposed to be asleep. That it's a whole different argument that I don't want to bring down the negativity. I'm just happy. Happy. And joy. That Outlaw Star is going to be back on Toonami, baby. I cannot wait for August 19th in a couple weeks. That's going to be a big weekend, by the way, for me. I'll start that Saturday by watching NXT Brooklyn 3, which is going to be awesome. And then I will segue right from there, because Brooklyn will probably be ending right around 11 o'clock, so I can just jump from NXT Brooklyn right to Toonami. And to start the countdown, and of course, again, right now, I'm loving Toonami. You have Dragon Ball Super, you have Dragon Ball Kai, the last chapter, which I'm enjoying. You have, I really liked the first episode I saw of JoJo's Strange Adventure Stardust Chronicles, so I enjoyed that. I'm lost on Tokyo Ghoul, and it's something I really would rather start at the beginning, so I'm lost on that, so I'm skipping that. But then you have Lupin the Third, the fourth season, which I really love that, and now you have Outlaw Star, so yeah, I'm pretty much staying up all night. All night long. Speaking of things that will be up all night long if I don't start focusing, today's episode, the main review, as I made mentioned, is Teen Titans versus Justice League. And as I also said, this is part of a 3 episodes, as far as the next 3 episodes, counting this episode of Tom's Regative, in which I will be looking at Teen Titan animated movies. I don't have the Teen Titans series, which I would definitely love to review. I wish they would put that on Netflix. And I don't have the first season of Teen Titans Go, which I can do a really quick review of it. It goddamn sucks. They're like, oh, Toby, you're not giving it a chance. No. No, I've given it a chance. Teen Titans Go is very much, in a way, kind of like my criticism of the recent Ghostbusters movie. In that, writing-wise, the jokes are about what they think the series was about. And not getting the point of Teen Titans. But, you know, I think that's a whole discussion to have in a couple episodes when we get to Teen Titans Trouble in Tokyo, which would be the final episode as part of this 3 episode introspective. And it is hard because Teen Titans, the original animated series in the early 2000s, was really my introduction to the Teen Titans series. At that point, I wasn't getting comic books. I wouldn't start collecting comic books really until in the late 2000s. But in the early to mid-2000s, when the series premiered, it was my introduction, you know? I mean, of course, everybody knows Robin. You know, everybody and their mother knows Robin. And if you need any proof of that, go back and read the stories of grandmothers calling up radio stations and writing letters to DC back in, what was it, 1986? In Death of the Family, when they killed off Robin. Yeah, that happened. Everybody knows Robin. But I didn't know Starfire. I didn't know Raven. I didn't know Beast Boy. I didn't know Cyborg. And, which, you know, when you go back now and you look at the new Teen Titans is created by Marv Wolfman. And, oh god, I'm gonna be slain on forgetting this. And I love his work too. I apologize, I just completely blanked on the artist name. Marv Wolfman and, well, writer's Marv Wolfman. I completely apologize. It's going to come to me at some point. I apologize. I know people like Spidey Dude and Gerard are right now yelling at their goddamn screen at me how much I suck. I mean, they do that anyways, but in particular for this. Oh, God. It'll come to me. Anyways, so when they did the new Teen Titans... again, that was the main crew. Add in Wonder Girl, Jericho. But I think Jericho got introduced as it sort of went along. Wonder Girl, add in there. And I want to say Kid Flash. The thing is, I've actually never gotten a chance to quite go back and read from the start the new Teen Titans. I wanted to have had chances to, but I never really gotten the opportunity to. Like, I was originally a Teen Titans sale, but I was trying to save money for things. And so I didn't get a chance to buy it on Comicology. So, and every time I went into a library to see if they had, like, the trade paperback or whatever, they never had it, so... I never got a chance to read it. I have some issues of the new Teen Titans. So I have gotten some individual issue looks into that group. And I can certainly see why people love them. And, again, if you go back to comic book history, in particular of the mid-80s... You know, there were the two comic book series that really everybody loved. And they were New Teen Titans for DC. And for Marvel, it was X-Men, which was being written by Chris Claremont. And that's where a lot of famous X-Men stories come, like Days of Future Past and others. Where Wolverine really came into prominence. And some of those storylines started to pop up. So that mid to the 80s going to that, I would say starting around 1983, those started became the series that really dominated the and popularity of the comic book world. And like I said, it's not hard to see why. Again, team aspects really work well. And we definitely saw that with the Teen Titans animated series in the 2000s, where... Again, you had these characters. They all had their predefined traits. It was vastly different from Justice League. And I think that ultimately helped it. Because rather than being just, it's the cousin copy child version of Justice League and Justice League Unlimited, where it's the sidekicks. It's like, this is their own team. Again... They form there in San Francisco. They're in this giant tea. Very comic book art animation. Again, this is stuff I think we'll definitely talk more about when we get into Teen Titans Trouble in Tokyo, which is going to be, like I said, the third episode. The second episode is going to be Teen Titans Judas Contract, which is the animated movie which came out this past year. I believe it was this past year. Early January. It may have been late last year. I apologize for that. I'll definitely have the correct notice. I want to say it was early this year, because this one came out, 2005 or 2016. Trying to think of all the movies. again, it's funny, when I write down notes, I write this down and this down, I write down the name of all the actors to make sure that I get it all correct. You know what I forget to always write down? I always forget to write down the date of the series. And then I'm having to, like, stall as I go onto the internet, which I'm not doing. I'm not actually doing. To look it all up. So, I gotta get better at that. As I try to get back into doing this thing regularly, hopefully that will be something I correct. So I do apologize for not having it, but I do believe this, today's episode, Teen Titans vs. Justice League came out 2016, and next episode, Juice Contract, came out early this year. And I'm sure I'll be corrected if I'm wrong. But anyways, so again, when I did also start collecting comics, Teen Titans is one of the series I actually started with, along with Spider-Man. In particular, Ultimate Spider-Man and Amazing Spider-Man. And Green Arrow as well. So that was one of the series that was on my pull list. And again, it's always been a fun team, because the thing about the Teen Titans is that they've always been about being more than just the sidekicks. Because certainly, yeah, Robin was on there, and they'd have Kid Flash and Wonder Girl, but they also had other young teenage superheroes that were trying to find their way. They weren't really on that Justice League level, but at the same time, they were Teen Titans. And in particular, a theme that will pop up in the Judas Contract about family, that's really a large part about really what the Teen Titans were, which were, they were all family. They came from different backgrounds. Some were sidekicks. Some were just discovering their powers, like Raven, like Cyborg, Starfire, who knew her powers but was in a whole new world. And they came together to form this unique family. And I think that's very interesting to look at when you're looking at the Teen Titans. And it makes them such a beloved team to read about, to watch. There was recently the news, and I can't remember the name of the actress. I know that she's Australian, and it's going to be her U.S. debut. But there was she was recently cast as Raven for the live-action movie or series. I can't remember which. That is going forward. So you have that coming. And so it's going to be very interesting to see. And, you know, and like, and we're going to definitely go more into this. Especially, like I said, when we get to Teen Titans Trouble in Tokyo in a couple episodes, that's going to be a real big talk about the television series, because there's so much more to talk about with the television series and really how innovative it was in a lot of ways, because I've only lightly brushed the surface here, but again, I just wanted to give sort of very rough, very quick overview of, you know, how I discovered Teen Titans, because I discovered in 2000. Then as I started collecting comic books in 2007, by word of mouth, by people like Mike Bailey and the Irredeemable Shag, and others, I started getting into Teen Titans as far as reading it. I always loved the series. You know, right now, the comic book that's going on right now, I'm really enjoying both, by the way. You know, the Titans, which has sort of more older Teen Titans feel, like the original Titans, because it is sort of more just sidekicks, and sort of how it's intertwined with the returning Wally West story as far as DC Rebirth, though I am behind in a couple issues, and also sort of the new Teen Titans that is now, where it's Aqualad from the Young Justice. In the DC Rebirth, you have that, you have Starfire, you have Damian Wayne, which is quickly becoming one of my favorite Robins, though nothing will ever top Tim Drake as the best Robin, as far as I'm concerned. Just saying it right now. But that Raven, Beast Boy, the other Wally West, the new DC 52 Wally West, that is, Flash. And so, again, they both have these very interesting dichotomies. And yeah, that's also something we're getting more into talking about Juice Comp, because they recently did a storyline that sort of copied that. And so we'll definitely talk a little bit more about that in the next episode. Right now, it's time, because we are a half hour in, and I haven't started the review yet, and I think this is a record as far as how long it takes for me to get into the review, but we had a lot of things to talk about. I hope you enjoyed hearing me talk about and hearing me ramble. But it is time to get into Teen Titans versus, or excuse me, Justice League versus the Teen Titans, because heaven forbid a movie that really is Teen Titans centric get top billing, because, you know, Wonder Woman and Superman cost too goddamn much. I would say, and Batman for that matter, who's barely in the movie, we'll get to all that. But, your cast rundown, you have Stuart Allen as Damian Wayne's Robin, Taissa Farmiga as Raven, John Barthal as Trigun, Brandon Suho as Garfield Logan slash Beast Boy, Jake T. Austin as Jamie Reyes slash Blue Beetle, Kyrie Walgren as Coriander slash Starfield. Starfield. Wow, I'm out of it. as Starfire. Jerry O'Connell, or Connell, excuse me, as Clark Kent slash Superman. Jason Omar as Bruce Wayne slash Batman. Sean Mayer as Dick Grayson slash Nightwing. Rosario Dawson as Diana Prince slash Wonder Woman. Christopher Gorham as Barry Allen slash Flash. Samar Moore as Victor Stone. Cyborg. Laura Bailey as Angela Chan. Steve Bloom as Lex Luthor. Toy Master, because anytime Steve Bloom's in a series, we have to talk about him. Terrence C. Carson as Ra's al Ghul. And Rick D. Wasserman as Weather Wizard, Solomon Grundy, and the Atomic Skull. Our story begins as the new Hall of Justice is being attacked by the Injustice Society, basically. Because we need to reference the Super Friends. Justice League beats them up, but the Weather Wizard gets strangely possessed by something strange. While the others try to figure out, Damian Wayne, being the badass that he is, just like, I'm just gonna fly the bat plane with all the missiles armed right into it. That'll take care of things, and certainly it does. But much to Batman's disappointment, because, it's, you know, he didn't follow orders, and now we have no leads. So, in what seems to be the superhero equivalent of sending them to boarding school, for Batman at least, Robin, by via Dick Grayson slash Nightwing, is shipped off to the Teen Titans. There he meets Starfire, the Leader, Blue Beetle, Beast Boy, and Raven. At first, they have issues working together, and by issues, I mean Damian is a little shit and thinks he's better than anybody until he gets his face almost blown off. But as Starfire tries to figure out ways to bring the team together, the Justice League, in particular Superman, gets possessed by the same spirit that possessed Weather Wizard, telling him to find the girl. As Justice League try to figure out what has happened to Superman, especially after he almost kills the Atomic Skull, Starfire has figured a great way to bring the world together, bring the team together, is to go to a carnival. But while there, Raven is attacked by disciples. Well, not disciples, but spirits belonging to her father, Trigun. Trigun had, as she later tells the Teen Titans, Trigun was basically is the devil. Her mother was a sexual sacrifice. Kids, don't ask your parents what that means. To Trigun, and, when she figured out what he was, she ran away with Raven. They went to this other plane that was supposed to peace, but of course Raven, in her curiosity, led Trigun to that world, to where her mother and all the other inhabitants were destroyed. And Raven then trapped him in, or at least until Raven trapped him in some realm. But now he's getting free and he's on the hunt for her to use her as a conduit into this world. By possessing the Justice League. So now the Teen Titans need to free the Justice Leaguers and then go back to the, or journey to the plane where Trigun is imprisoned and seal him once and for all. Ladies and gentlemen, whew, that was a lot of story to go over. But, ladies and gentlemen, it is time. Justice League versus Teen Titans. Another day, I could use some change from this repetitive charade. It reads like a book, it's got me hooked, but I can't find the last page. I'd rather find an escape. Help me believe in something, 'cause I am broken. Welcome back, and let's get right into it with the things that I really liked about this movie. The very first thing that just really pops off about this movie was I really liked Damian and Raven's story, and in a way, how their growth was connected. You know, again, you have Damian, who is the grandson of Ra's al Ghul, and you know, it's very much, in a way, this movie is sort of a continuance of several different DC animated movies. With Justice League, it's sort of the continuation of the Justice League, I believe it was the Paradox animated movie. But basically, it was sort of like the new 52 version of how Justice League came together. Basically, to fight Darkseid. And I say that because, again, they're all in their sort of new 52 costumes. Which, by the way, of course, one of the funny things about this is you have Rosario Dawson voicing Wonder Woman, who was in the Wonder Woman animated movie as, oh, God, again, I'm blanking on names. Because I don't have it in front of me, I'm blanking on it, but, not Aphrodite. I don't know, because I'm trying to think, people are yelling at the screen right now. George Perez. I love how you stop thinking about it and it comes to you. George Perez was the artist I was trying to think of earlier. And at some point, Rosario Dawson's character from the Wonder Woman animated movie will come to me as well. But I'm just saying, I find it funny, she played... it's not Aphrodite, it's an A name. For some reason. But basically, sort of the second greatest warrior on Amazonia behind the Queen, or third behind the Queen in Wonder Woman. Yeah. Played that character. So now she's playing Wonder Woman. Again, we will get to the Justice League in a little bit. But again, so it's Justice League continuing that. And with Damian, you know, this really feels like a continuance of the Son of Batman animated movie, which was based on the whole storyline where basically Talia introduces Bruce to his son, which happened... I want to say the comic happened late 2000s, like 2007, around there. 2006, 2007. It happened, like, I think it happened after Final Crisis, I remember. Which brought, by the way, it brought the whole Son of the Demon into, I believe it was Son of the Demon, into continuity. Because Son of the Demon was a sort of out-of-continuity comic book story of Batman, where basically Batman went, happened, I believe, 80s, maybe very early 90s, where Batman goes, no, it was 80s, I can't remember where in 80s, but basically where Batman goes on his journey as part of helping Ra's, and at some point in the story, him and Talia have sex, and at the end of the story, she's basically pregnant, but that was, like I said, was out of continuity, doesn't matter, and this brought it in continuity. A lot of convolutedness there. But that's what Son of Batman was based on. It introduced, basically, Damian being introduced as the new Robin, and then, of course, you have Batman Bad Blood, in which all of them get her, and I say that because during that movie, there's a point where Dick is on the phone with somebody, and he calls her Corey, so indicating then that was Starfire. So there are threads connecting all these different animated movies, and I guess if you've not seen those, here's the thing: if you've not seen those, you'll not be confused, because they do a great job right off the bat of sort of introducing both Damian and Raven sort of personality as sort of outsiders on their respective team, on the Teen Titans, and the fact that, you know, you have Raven, who's very, she's there, but she's very by herself. She's very, much a loner, very much away from her, doesn't choose to really socialize much. And, of course, Damian being with his superiority complex, because I can speak English, I promised you I can. But with that complex, thinking that he's better than everybody, which ostracizes him from the team. And so their growth throughout the movie, which seems connected, in particular once, you know, Raven helps heal him, and they both sort of see each other's minds, and Damian becomes, in a way, connected. And this, I will say this, after this movie, I am complete Raven Damian Wayne shipper. I am just saying, like, I love them as a couple. And there's something that happens at the end of, again, this is next week's episode, but Teen Titans Judas Complex, at the end, that happens. I love, it's one of my favorite little things that's ever happened in a DC animated movie. And there are a lot of things I love in DC animated movies, going all the way back to Batman Mask of Phantasm. I don't know why I started going to Old Man Tommy's right there, but, you know, I'm an old man, and I was there in 1994 when Batman Mask of the Phantasm came out. I need help. What was that Michael Bailey said about his podcast? A detailed comic book podcast or a desperate cry for help? You decide. I don't think there's any deciding. Help me! Anyways. I love how their stories are interconnected and they both grow as part of the team as the movie continues. And they really do a great job in this movie of taking the time to do that with little things here or there. You know, them being at the carnival and sort of little things that they're doing together that allow them to open themselves up. And all that. And then, of course, once Raven, you know, tells her family history, again, Damian not instantly wanting to say, like, we need to lock her up and do this. Like, being there to help her, and just the way they both grow as part of the team. I mean, they still have their very outlandish personalities, and I say that in particular with Damian. But I think that's one of the things about Damian that I love about him, is that he is this very outlandish, very absurd, he is who he is, but But there's also underneath, I can't believe I'm going to say this, it's like ogres in that they're like onions. That as you peel away the layers, you... So, I'm trying to think, because there's a movie or a TV series that made the same exact joke. Like, they're like onions, so you're saying I'm like an ogre. I'm like, yeah. And I can't remember to save my life. But again, it's that... It's on the tip of my tongue, and I can't figure out how to say it. But again, it is that fact that you get to watch these characters, you get to sit down, you get to know these characters, and as such, you get to understand their growth and see them grow as part of the team throughout the movie. And it makes what happens at the end, where Damien doesn't even think twice about basically killing his grandfather, or at least the sort of hell version of his grandfather, and of Raven sealing her father away, again, overcoming their own demons in a way together, and I love how that's all connected. And the entire Teen Titans team and the dynamic, again, it feels so much like what sort of that dynamic that I felt when I was watching Teen Titans in 2000. And the crew here, that did Justice League versus Teen Titans, just nailed the concept of what the Teen Titans are. Beast Boy feels so much like Beast Boy from, again, that Teen Titans series in the 2000s. And I say that because, the Young Justice Beast Boy felt very different. It wasn't that sort of Greg, because again, Greg Clips, who I got to meet, wonderful guy, had a very unique, very awesome way. If you watch the current Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles series that's on Nickelodeon, it's sort of that same thing, because he plays Michelangelo on that series. But again, Beast Boy was so unique. He was the comedy aspect, but there was something deeper with him. Again, that feel to that. And then you had Cyborg, who was sort of the best friend to him. And they both played off each other. And then Starfire, who was her own character. And yeah, they really captured something different from what was on Young Justice. The Beast Boy there was, again, this kid who was part of this mother who was doing research in Africa, and something happened, and that turned him into Beast Boy. And he was more of this kid rather than his own person, who was very much connected to Miss Martian. And again, I'm not saying there was anything wrong with that, but it was different than what the Teen Titans Beast Boy was from the early 2000 series. This series very much looked to capture that the team in this version of the Teen Titans, and you see that from, again, Beast Boy, you all being sort of the classic Beast Boy, all fun and games and everything. Blue Beetle really taking over Cyborg's spot since Cyborg was on the Justice League now. Though it could be said that by the end of this movie, he's sort of switched over in a way to the Teen Titans, or maybe he's doing both. By the way, screenplay was done by Brian Q. Miller and Alan Burnett. It was directed by Sam Liu, who's done a lot of the DC animated series. So they did a great job of capturing. And then, of course, with Starfire. And the thing I love here, it's not the ditzy, doesn't know corp morc, all the funny words. And maybe ditzy isn't the right word, but in the Teen Titans animated series, Starfire is portrayed as not really knowing a lot. And it's not that she's dumb, but she's just not knowledgeable. and in a way innocent. Here, it's much more different. Here, Starfire is very much portrayed as somebody who's been on this Earth for a while, knows most things, but occasionally there's something that she doesn't get because of that. Again, the difference of cultures. And so she has to try to sit there and figure out, like, how do I bridge this gap of what I want them to understand? And, you know, I think a great idea is, again, you know, she's trying to think, you know, while they don't come out and say it, it's that, like, well, how do I bring a team together? You know, when you want to bring a team together, you do things. And then, of course, there's that scene, and thank you to I really want to thank the Sandlu and the animators, where Starfire is in a towel, because I had flashbacks of a Lonely Place of Dying, I just want to say. And those are very good flashbacks to that comic book. And Tim Drake at Starfire's door. The thing that really makes, by the way, that scene's hilarious is Dick Grayson's eyes. It's like, first he's not looking. And then she's laying down and he's like, yes. This is very good. And then he instigates fun. He's like, fun? What fun? Huh? What's going on? And it's like, thank you, Dick. You're so genius. And it gives her the idea to take the team to the carnival. And it's, again, all that really, really connects to what the original Teen Titans was. As far as that, what the Teen Titans series was about in the 2000s. And, again, that really helps you connect with this team, because it's very fun, very sort of familial. I'm trying to get a word, but it's like, you know, again, you connect to them because it's like your family, and it feels like family, like connecting with long-lost family again, to where, again, it's like this all feels familiar. And I'll go right into that, and again, part of that also being designs. Like, they change up the designs, but, like, Beast Boy's design has throwbacks to the Teen Titans series. Raven's look really hasn't changed much, but it just feels modernized and everything. But then there is Starfire's. Now, I love the character Starfire, because I think she's such an interesting character, being that she's this refugee from another world, and very much all the things that I was recently saying, to where she's trying to connect. It's that cultural branch, like trying to branch her culture with our culture, being that she is a refugee, and that this is now her home, and things are done differently than they are on her world. And for whatever reason, I just always connect with that. And of course, yes, her character design doesn't hurt either. I loved her in what I've read of the new Teen Titans. I loved her in Red Hood and the Outlaws. I really love the fact that they sort of matured her, and that she wasn't this just doofus. Because I think that's something that people make the mistake of. I think people, like, oh, they portray her as sort of this doofus ditz. I mean, even I sometimes, when describing her, will describe her that way, or at least describing the original Teen Titans animated series, I do. But, like, that's not what she is. She's not a ditz. And so, again, I think that gets lost in translation. The thing I loved about Red Hood and the Outlaws is they portrayed her as very, very intelligent. Like, some of it is a facade, you know, to protect herself. And I like that. It was very strange, though, when Amanda Conner and Jim Paramari did the Starfire series. And I do think I need to give it a second chance. But I remember reading that and not liking it because I felt like they were trying to be the animated series, but messing it up because, again, it was that, you know, well, we need to make her ditzy, and I just finished reading the series, by the way, where she's not presented as ditzy, where that whole thing is presented as the facade, and I'm not getting any of what's going on as a facade. Like, okay, Starfire should know what a watermelon is. Okay? But in particular with Starfire's design, it seems like DC's always been trying to sort of make multiple people happy. And because they're the fans that want the original design, I'm sure everybody's going to make a mention that it's mostly male. And then there are people who grew up with the animated series that's very popular, and they've been wanting to meld it. And, of course, now in Teen Titans, she's in a full bodysuit, which I think is so generic. But I look at this movie, and I'm like, why can't this be her new costume design? This is perfect. It's a melding of sort of things from her original with her animated series. It's like got all of that nostalgia feeling in the design. It's perfect. And by the way, I just want to sit here and say this. The man who came up with the idea that she can transform into her costume via Sailor Moon-like, I want to kiss you. I want to kiss you all day long. Because thank you for that Sailor Moon transformation sequence. Like, I was fanboying out when that happened. And again, I love that whole I loved the other transformation sequences. Trust me, I did. But that was like straight out of Sailor Moon, where the camera's spinning completely around her, and that, like, Batman and Robin-esque butt shot. Boom. Thank you very much. I all of a sudden have a Cisco song from 1998 playing in my mind. Moving on before I get in trouble. I certain people. So yeah, I just loved everybody's designs. I love all the Titans designs because they were just nostalgic, and they felt like they were a great amalgamation of sort of the modern and the new DC with the animated Teen Titans TV series. And I just love all the Titans designs. This will be different when we get to Justice League. You might be noticing a substance of me talking about Justice League. That's coming, I promise you. I think the last thing I liked was the soundtrack. And I mean soundtrack as in the couple of songs that they played, particularly during the carnival sequences. And it's very strange, like, I think what makes them work is that they felt teenage, if that makes any sense. You know, it's, you know, again, you had sort of this dance track that was part of the, because apparently the thing in carnivals now is to have a giant Dance Dance Revolution stage for people to have Dance Dance Revolution dance off to, because apparently this is 2003 again. I'm like, I'm also thinking, like, didn't Family Guy do this? Or American Dad? Like, one of the two did something like this. In fact, I do believe it was American Dad. Anyways. But, like, those, I think, actually made those scenes work. And again, because they had a very, like, this is what sort of youngsters would listen to. But it felt that way. Like, you know, the initial one, which was this sort of pop rock track, I think worked really well. And it worked well for that, I'm blanking on a lot of stuff. What a surprise. Your host is blanking on stuff because, well, let's be honest. The drinking game wouldn't be fun if I didn't. Because that's one of the things. Remember, take a shot when Thomas blanks on something. By the way, I'm not held accountable or responsible for any alcohol-related injuries one might occur while listening to Tom's prerogative. Oh, come to me. As everything does. But the montage, see, there it is. It came to me. So the montage, that sort of pop rock song, which, by the way, you heard in the intro for this segment. Yeah. I think that worked really well. And then, of course, the Dance Dance Revolution song. I think that really worked well for those scenes. And part of the reason I bring this up is because, well, as we'll get to in stuff I didn't like, score really felt lacking in a lot of places. But we'll get to that. One more thing. I kind of mentioned this, but I really liked the story's ending. Just in case it wasn't clear, I just want to reaffirm that. I really liked the story's ending. I really liked that it was the Teen Titans that had to really save the day by going into that plane, fighting off the monsters. Great, by the way. Another thing I love a lot of the action scenes, particularly with the Teen Titans. I thought those were done extremely well. Really well animated. Again, every action scene showed off every character's abilities really well. And, yeah, I just love the action animation in the series. It's really well done. And again, that ending, which I kind of talked about with Damian and Raven's story, because it was really connected with that. And the way their arcs were completed in that, and the way it helped towards, like, bring the team ultimately together after they helped win the day and basically get the Justice League's respect. But speaking of the Justice League, that brings us to the stuff I didn't like, and that was the Justice League. I felt they were really useless in the story. They just, like, in particular, it was the Superman and Wonder Woman's romance angle, and this, I guess I can include the JLL designs into this, because sort of the ultimate problem here is where Teen Titans was melding sort of the New 52 in a way with the modern, or with sort of the nostalgia of the TV series, this was just New 52. And I guess for me, and for anybody who doesn't like the New 52 designs, and the way the characters were portrayed in that, it's not something you're fond of. And I never was a fan of the way New 52 portrayed Wonder Woman. I can't really put a finger on it. It's just, it felt off. Like, I wish I had this magical way to portray it, but it just, you know when something just feels off? It feels, and I think part of that also is Superman and Wonder Woman's romantic angle. I don't think, it's just this obsessive need by, I think, some people and whatever, or by DC occasionally, to pair Superman and Wonder Woman together. They do it every now and then, and it never worked. I mean, there have been some instances, like, for instance, Superboy and Wonder Girl in Teen Titans, in and around Infinite Crisis, that worked really well. There was all storyline going through there of their connection. But that worked really well. Superman and Wonder Woman hasn't. And it's just, the characters, I think, are just too different, and they don't play off each other really well, in my opinion. I don't want this to sound like it's like I'm a purist and it has to be Lois Lane. Well, I am a purist. Let me scratch that. And Perza, it has to be Lois Lane, because Lois Lane, again, is a balance to Clark. And that's what makes the couple work so well, because it's not Superman dating Lois Lane, it's Clark dating Lois Lane. Because, again, Superman is the facade, in a way. The real person is Clark Kent. And that's what doesn't work, is because it's not Superman dating Wonder Woman, it's Clark dating Wonder Woman. And there's this whole thing about, you know, the superhero, and I don't know, and again, they had gone to see a movie, and Wonder Woman complaining about the hero having to save the girl, and then Clark saving her. It just felt disjointed, disconnected, and like, I really don't care about this. Can we go back to the Teen Titans? And that was really the thing about all the Justice League characters. And I mean, Flash was in it for what? What? A couple scenes? Like, he's there at the beginning, and doesn't really come back till they all come to Teen Titans trying to get Raven, then they're jumped, turns evil, gets turned into evil, and you really don't see a lot of them. Same can be said for Batman, who there at the beginning, you see him in a couple scenes, but when he realizes they're being attacked, he basically knocks himself out. Thanks, Bruce! Like, you couldn't figure out any other way to avoid being taken over by shadow spirits than to poison yourself and possibly lead to your death. Wow, you're a smart thinker, Bruce. It's like, why had, you know, you look at this team of the Justice League and you sit there and think, why hasn't the world been taken over yet? Oh, that's right, because we have the Teen Titans, which is a much more competent team, and only coming together by the end of it. And I guess that brings some designs, because, I mean, I guess I'm okay with Cyborg's design, because it still feels very classic Cyborg, and I guess Batman's okay, and Flash is Flash, but again, it's the New 52 Superman and New 52 Wonder Woman design, which I just never liked. Like, I guess the term is, it's just too modernized. You know? There's one thing to modernize a costume, but then you can too modernize it, and it just didn't feel right. Another thing I didn't like is the crowd, and really this is, I think, you're going to hear this again next episode. And this is really also a criticism for the modern DC animated movies, is that I don't think they do crowds well. And I don't know why it is. It's just, I mean, there's sometimes, like, in the next movie, there's a scene where there's crowds and they do it well, but then there are a lot of times where they don't. And it's just, it's very hit and miss, it's very spotty. And you, in this particular thing, I'm thinking of both at the beginning, and, at the end. But at the beginning, it's like, Robin's on crowd control. Yeah, two people. Wow. He's really busy taking care of herding these so-called sheep, as he calls it. It's like, okay, it just, and maybe that's what they were going for, but there's a disconnect of, like, he's on crowd control. What crowd? There is no crowd. Because you don't have the animation budget, apparently, to animate a crowd. And I get that, like, at the beginning part, like, they were trying to, he's bored, and, like, there is no crowd, maybe. But just, you know, also at the ending, where they're supposed to be in this very populated city in the Middle East somewhere. And yet, there's nobody running from this giant devil-like demon that's walking down Main Street? It's like, come on, there's gotta be some people. There has to be. You know, and it's just like, I guess they did all their crowd budget on the carnival. Which, by the way, it's amazing how fast that thing clears out when an explosion hits in the mountaintops. just in time for Raven to roll through and for it to be empty so the Teen Titans can fight the demon spirits. You know, it's... And I guess the other thing is the lack of score. And that's... I really can't sit here and tell you of any score that just stood out to me as far as being memorable as far on this movie. Like, and that's why I had the soundtracks and things I liked, because like because of that lack of score, like really the only thing musically that really stood out were the use of those songs during the montage and during the Dance Dance Revolution scene, which is a phrase I never thought I'd be saying about a Teen Titan movie, a Dance Dance Revolution scene. But like, it's really not memorable. I can't say it's awful, but sometimes the score, just being forgetful, or should I say forgettable, and not memorable, can be just as worse as it just being bad. And, you know, honestly, I'll take a bad score, as far as just not sounding good, over something that's just forgettable, because at least I remember the bad score. I can tell you why it's a bad score. Maybe I shouldn't say that, because you can all get a bad score. I'm like, why are they giving me a bad score? I'd rather have a forgettable score, and I'll go back and forth. I'd rather have a good score. there was just really nothing memorable score-wise with this movie. Overall, with this movie, I honestly really enjoyed it. I don't like the Justice League stuff, and every time the Justice League stuff comes there, it's like, when are we getting back to the Titans? When are we getting back to the Titans? When are we getting back to the Titans? The thing is, you need the Justice League stuff because it's Justice League versus the Teen Titans. But, like, there's just stuff there that I feel they can cut. Like the Superman-Wonder Woman romantic angle stuff, which I just didn't care about. And thank God most of this movie is focused on the Teen Titans. And more importantly, focused on Damian Wayne's, his story, Raven, her story. And they did a great job of sort of combining that sort of Bride of Trigon story that I believe was one of the first storylines going through Teen Titans. I could be wrong on it. Sure, somebody will correct me. But that is also another classic Teen Titans storyline of, you know, Trigon and, you know, trying to get Raven, use her as a basically a connection to connect to our world so he could come to our world. And again, that being the sort of penultimate storyline that ended the actual Teen Titans animated series. So for a lot of us who love Teen Titans, that's a very, very classic storyline. And combining it with Damian Wayans and, you know, him trying to come to terms with the death of his grandfather and trying to come to terms with who he is. Is he this warrior of, you know, Ra's al Ghul and the League of Shadows, or is he Robin? Is he something else? Coming to terms with his own destiny and who he is. And I thought they did that extremely well. And again, that classic sort of Teen Titans animated feel, which they would continue on into next week's episode, Teen Titans Judas Contract, of which we'll get to next episode. But yeah, didn't like the Justice League stuff, didn't like the designs, didn't like their stories. Crowd animation, pretty non-existent in a lot of places, and lack of score doesn't hurt the fact that, again, that they focused mostly on the Titans. And that was the saving grace of this movie, in my opinion, is that they focused on the Titans and those stories that I've talked about. And because of that, it makes it an enjoyable movie to watch. There have been better DC animated movies, but there have been a lot worse DC animated movies. And at the end of the day, you feel fulfilled. This is like, in a way, it's a good Titan origin story of like, this is the formation of this new Teen Titans. And in that way, it's fun to watch them connect as a team. So, ultimately, I give Justice League versus Teen Titans a 3.5 out of 5. I find it enjoyable. Your mileage may vary depending on whether you're a Teen Titans fan, a Justice League fan. And if you're a Teen Titans fan like me, I think you'll like a lot more of the stuff that's in this movie than isn't. And if you're a Justice League fan and not a Teen Titans fan, well, you're flat out of luck. You're not going to enjoy this at all. But the overall use of the Teen Titans makes this an enjoyable and fun watch. So 3.5 out of 5. And that is it for this episode of Tom's Regative. I hope you enjoyed it. If you have any emails or comments that you want to leave the show, remember you can leave them at AppSolutionNetwork132@gmail.com. That's AppSolutionNetwork132@gmail.com. Remember to check out all the other content on the AppSolution Network, including Tom's Prerogative and all of Shin Tiger Curl's videos. And remember to check out all our fellow podcasting friends on the sidebar of the site. That includes Michael Bailey and his Fortress of Bailey 2 podcasting network, which includes Views from Lombox and From Crisis to Crisis, his new the new podcast on Batman that he does with Andrew Leyland, where he looks at much overlooked Batman stories. And he has a new one doing the same with Superman. So check that out. Check out the Irredeemable Shag, who I mentioned earlier. And, of course, his Fire and Water Network, which has so many spectacular podcasts on there. Like the Fire and Water podcast, like the Movie Renew podcast, the Nightcast, among others. And check out all our other friends on the sidebar. They do great stuff. And that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. I hope you enjoyed it. I went a lot longer than I really wanted to go, but again, hopefully, I can get over whatever this thing is that makes me do like one podcast every 2 or 3 months and actually put out a group of them. I certainly hope so, because next episode, we continue to the sequel to what is this animated movie, as Terra, as we saw by the secret ending to this movie, has arrived. And I hear there's a Judas in the mist. Yes, that's right, because next episode is Teen Titans Judas Contract. But until then, my Tsunami Generation,
find cover. It's gonna get too dangerous.
Stay golden.
Hope you enjoyed it. This is Tom signing off, and until we meet again, you know the rest.